time to take control of your happiness. This is Being Young at Any Age on EZ 1430. Now, here's your host, George Bentley.
Hello, hello, hello. It's George Bentley, your host of Being Young at Any Age, where we help you create your own personal roadmap to optimal happiness, wellness, and vitality, no matter what your current challenges may be. And as you know, if you've been listening to the program, I try to simplify this sometimes complicated information into simple categories that I classify as eat right, exercise, avoid injury, and reduce stress. And as you know, I think humor is probably one of the most powerful medicines that we have, and I try to lace a lot of laughter and humor into what we're doing here, but the message is very serious. And as you know, I believe that you, me, Gerard, we're all going to live to be 95, 100 years old. The only question we need to be asking ourselves is how vibrant and healthy are we going to be when we get there? You know, how much health care are we going to consume between now and the time that we exit this earth? How much money are we going to cost society and the healthcare system? So the bottom line is, I believe that we are all personally responsible for creating our path and our roadmap. And as you know, I call myself a curious George. The only reason I know what I know is I challenge you to do the same thing. So you can listen to our content, and it's okay if you disagree with it, and it's okay if you agree with it. But no matter how you feel, I believe it is vitally important that you stop and ask yourself why. You need to be able to answer the question, why do you believe something? Why do you not believe something? And that's the premise that we really approach everything with on the program. Today, I'm super excited to have my personal doctor, Gerard Guillory, is here with us. Gerard is a board-certified internal medicine doc, right?
Correct.
And he's been practicing in Aurora, Colorado since 1985. And the thing I like about Gerard that I think you're going to love, too, is he's really unique. You know, I'm 66 years old, right? I'm not a young dog. And I have been looking for the right kind of personal physician for years. And I'm just excited that I finally found Gerard. And the reason I'm excited is we think alike. And that although you're a traditional Western medicine doc, you believe in functional medicine. And that's what I really like about you. So I want to start out with, could you explain to me, you know, exactly what is functional medicine?
Of course. Well, you know, I'd like to contrast that with traditional medicine. And if you look at traditional medicine, it's the disease drug model.
Right.
Here's the disease, here's the drug. And traditional doctors are good at making diagnosis and then getting out the prescription pad and just giving you a medication. And
it's kind of like a sick care system, not a health care system.
Exactly, exactly. And that's not what we do. So with functional medicine, you look for the root cause of the problem, use natural treatments whenever possible, and look at how all the organ systems interrelate with each other. And that's why sometimes you'll see holistic medicine look at the whole body. I mean, duh, isn't that the way medicine should be practiced?
Well, right.
Look for the root cause of the problem. Hello.
Yep. That's exactly. Well, same as a tree, right?
Exactly.
The roots aren't healthy. The tree's not healthy. It's all integrated. And, we've talked a little bit on the show about, you know, some of the challenges with Western medicine approaches in that we treat symptoms, not causes. And I used the analogy a couple of weeks ago. You know, I break my arm, and to give me aspirin and pain medication is never going to resolve the underlying issue that's causing that pain, right? So tell me a little bit about how you came to be interested in functional medicine, or, you know, just give the listeners an idea about how different their experience with you might be from a traditional Western medicine doc.
Well, I think the big difference is, again, we're going to look for the root cause of the problem. And I became interested in it with an interest in food intolerances and food sensitivities. Mm. And that led into an interest into irritable bowel syndrome. So I wrote the first book. And
I've got irritable bowel syndrome, too.
Do you?
Yeah.
Irritable. It's a common problem.
It is. So is the bowel problem, too.
Exactly.
So how this is like your leaky gut stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot about leaky gut now, and a lot of traditional doctors will roll their eyes if you mention leaky gut. They think it's a quack, you know, diagnosis. But if you call it increased intestinal permeability, which sounds more scientific, then all of a sudden it's legit. And there's thousands of articles on intestinal permeability. I mean, that's a very hot topic right now. It'd be like me saying you have tennis elbow and nobody buys it, and then we change the name to lateral epicondylitis, and all of a sudden it's legit.
Well, yeah, and that's a real thing. I went in to see you a couple of weeks ago. My elbow was hurting. You said I had tennis elbow. And I'm like, I don't play tennis.
I know, and you don't have to wear a jock to get jock itch. I mean, come on. Yeah, all right, well, it hurts. So, yeah, most people don't play tennis.
And by the way, I got the brace you recommended that I get.
Well, let's not talk about your personal medical problems right now.
Let's keep them above the waist. All right. So, leaky gut, big deal, right? So, what about, I hear a lot of talk about gluten and, you know, how different things that food substances we're exposing our body to affect our immune system and our overall health. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Of course. And the first thing I like to point out is there's been about a 400% increase in autoimmune disorders in the past 25 years. One in six people has an autoimmune disorder. 12% of the population has a thyroid problem now, and the most common cause is so-called autoimmune or Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Stop and think about that for a minute. 400% increase. Now, if we had a 400% increase in cancer or heart disease, everybody'd be running around trying to figure out what the heck's going on.
Right.
It's an epidemic.
Right. And autoimmune, exactly. Dumb that down for me.
So autoimmune is where your body starts attacking itself.
Ah.
It makes antibodies that actually destroy your native tissue. So let's take the example of autoimmune thyroiditis, and that actually is a cross reaction with gluten. So your body's actually making antibodies against a portion of the gluten protein that's found in wheat, rye, and barley, and those same antibodies cross react with the native thyroid tissue because it looks the same.
Right. And your body gets confused. It's attacking itself.
It's attacking itself.
Wow.
Self-flagellation.
Excuse me?
Self-flagellation. Let me dumb it down. You're beating yourself.
Oh, okay. I started to say, I'm really good at that. That'll do that. That's why I got fur on my hands. But anyway, so what do we do? I mean, what's the simplest thing or the smartest thing I can do to help my body not get into that situation?
Well, you need to seal and heal your gut, and that's basically what we do. If you ask me, what do we do in our office? We seal and heal your gut as the starting point for getting you on the road to optimal wellness. I mean, that's critical. Hippocrates said 2,000 years ago that all disease begins in the gut, mm-hmm. and I'm an early adopter some 2,000 years later.
So how do I seal my gut?
So let's kind of back up a little bit and talk about, well, what is leaky gut?
Okay.
So think of the lining of your small intestine as like a cheesecloth.
Right.
So if you were to pulse some food in a blender and then pour it through the cheesecloth, you're going to get the liquid on one side and the solid stuff should stay on the other side. If you damage your cheesecloth and you do the same thing, you're going to get chunks of the food into the bloodstream that shouldn't be there. So with leaky gut, it's not leaking into the intestine, it's leaking into the bloodstream. That in turn activates your immune system, which starts making all these antibodies against portions of the protein in foods, which can cross-react with the thyroid tissue in the case of Hashimoto's. And that kind of sets into play all of the systemic inflammation and the autoimmunity.
So it's like I'm getting bacteria and substance in my body and my bloodstream that shouldn't be there. My body thinks it's under attack, and so it's trying to get rid of these invaders, if you will.
Exactly. So your cheesecloth, the lining of your small intestine, if you were to stretch it out, is the surface area of a tennis court. It's the largest interface we have between the outside world and our bodies. So yes, you're getting bacterial particles and food particles into the bloodstream. And that's basically what leaky gut, or call it increased intestinal permeability, if that makes you feel better. But that's what it is.
No, it doesn't. It confuses me, Jordan.
Yeah. Increased intestinal permeability.
I can understand leaky gut. Oh, cheesecloth, I got that.
Okay.
I mean, but that's what this is all about. I mean, I think if the listeners can understand some of these seemingly complicated medical concepts, when you boil them down, it's fairly easy to understand. I never thought of my intestine as being permeable. I mean, I really didn't. I mean, I think of, what is it, menudo or what, calamari? No, that's something else.
Well, no, it's got to be permeable. You want the nutrients in, and you want the macromolecules, and you want all the nutrients, but you don't want basically the sewage from your small intestine seeping into your bloodstream.
Right. That doesn't sound good.
No.
Yeah. So talk to me about gluten.
Well, you know, gluten is a hot topic.
I hear it all.
You know, 10 years ago, if you went to restaurants, you wouldn't see all the gluten-free alternatives that you have now.
Yeah.
It's forecast that within the next 10 years, a third of the population is going to be gluten-free, a third's going to be gluten-light, so they try and avoid it but don't avoid it 100%, and a third of the people, it'll be business as usual. And I think the reason that trend is occurring is when people go off gluten and then they reintroduce it, they realize they don't feel so well when they're exposed to it.
Hmm. So how do you figure out which third you're in, or can you?
Well, no, that's just what people are going to do. That's their behavior going forward because they've heard about it and done some experimentation. And I have doctor colleagues that want to argue that this whole gluten thing's a fad and they're clueless. I'd love to be in a national forum, national TV, and debate them. And the first thing I would point out for people that think this is a fad is that celiac disease, an autoimmune disorder related to gluten, and the most severe gluten reaction you can have, well, it's gone from 1 in 3,000 25 years ago to 1 in 100. So 1 in 100 people has celiac disease, the worst gluten reaction. That's an indisputable fact. You can't deny that.
1 in 100?
1 in 100. 1% of the population.
Wow. And what's causing that? I mean, was it always that way and we just weren't diagnosing it? Or has it got something to do with our diet? I mean, what?
So that's a great question. So they've actually looked at blood that they had from the 1970s to see if the celiac antibody was there. So think about this. In the 70s, to diagnose celiac, you had to do an intestinal biopsy and show where the villi, the little finger-like projections in the small intestine that provide the absorptive surface area. Mm-hmm. So you had to do a biopsy. Then along the way, they figured out the gene for celiac. And then along the way, they figured out some antibody tests. So now you can diagnose celiac by doing a blood test. You don't have to have an intestinal biopsy.
Ah.
So they've gone back to blood that was stored from the 70s looking for the gene once it was discovered, and they found that 25% of the population has the gene. 25% of the population has the gene today, so there hasn't been a genetic shift. They've gone back and looked at the antibodies from this stored blood and found that it was about 1 in 3,000, so it's not better testing, increased awareness. More people have celiac disease today because the gene is being turned on in more people, and that's because of leaky gut.
And so that means diet?
I mean,
is it really gets back to what we're eating and what we're putting in our body?
Yeah, and I think we're going to find that. So to get celiac, to use that as an example, you have to have the gene, you have to be exposed to gluten, and you have to have increased intestinal permeability or leaky gut from something else. So something else damages your cheesecloth, and then chunks of the gluten protein get in there, and then the celiac gene gets turned on.
Okay, George, so you're telling me this whole gluten thing is not a fad.
It is not a fad, and I would encourage all of your listeners, no matter what kind of problems they have, just to try going off gluten for a while and see how they feel. We have everyone do that that comes in as a patient, and it's amazing how many people come back and realize that when they reintroduce it, they don't feel so great.
So steps for going off gluten, what is it? If I don't understand what that means.
Well, I mean, now with the internet, you can go Google gluten-free diet, but gluten's a protein in common grains like wheat, rye, barley, for example.
Are there foods that have gluten that I may not realize have gluten in them?
So what I would tell patients is just gluten-free foods a lot of times are high in carbs and calories, and they're kind of disguised junk food. So it's not about going out and getting a bunch of gluten-free pasta, for example. It's just eat a nutrient-dense whole food diet, vegetables and fruit and good meat, good fats.
So kind of back to the try to pull it out of the ground and keep it natural, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. And can you help me understand a little better what symptoms I would be feeling if I am suffering from leaky gut?
So that's the quagmire, really, is that the symptoms are all over the place, and it can be skin rashes, psoriasis, eczema. One thing to point out is that there are more neurological manifestations of gluten reactions or celiac disease than there are digestive symptoms. So a lot of people think leaky gut's all about having a digestive tract that's not working.
Right.
And 40% of those patients have no digestive symptoms. They've got some other autoimmune inflammatory mood disorders. I mean, brain fog is one of the most common causes or one of the most common symptoms of leaky gut.
What?
Brain fog. Just can't concentrate.
What?
Oh, stop it.
Well, I do suffer from that.
We're going to get you off gluten by the time we're done.
By the time the show's over, it's like I'm off for gluten. Well, I did. You recommended that to me, and I tested that, and I wasn't very compliant. And just to be honest, part of my challenge was to really understand. So it isn't just, I mean, most breads have gluten in them, but it, like you said, I can get pasta, gluten-free pasta or whatever. So, but it's not just the grains. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, stop eating bread. But there's more to it than that, right?
Yeah, and you've got gluten, trace amounts of gluten in a lot of processed and packaged foods. I mean, I would just make the case, again, eat a nutrient-dense whole food diet and don't eat processed packaged foods, and you'll never be exposed to it.
So do meats get into this?
No, there's no, you know, I chuckle when I see kind of gluten-free things that obviously, you know, gluten-free vinegar, whatever.
Gluten-free vinegar?
You know, whatever, gluten-free meat. Yeah, well, there's never going to be any gluten for the most part in fresh meat.
Okay, well, I'm going to look for that. I don't. So the symptoms I'm looking for, foggy thinking, what, low energy levels?
It's all over the board. I mean, fatigue, brain fog. A big one is joint aches and pains.
Joint aches.
Because when you've got a leaky gut, stuff's getting across your cheesecloth. Well, it ends up percolating in the bloodstream and it lands in your joints. So a lot of your rheumatoid-like patients and lupus-like patients, and I say like because they have these weird aches and pains and they don't fit the full-blown, you know, lupus that we used to see 25 years ago.
So how often are these things misdiagnosed?
I think all the time. I think it's all the time they're misdiagnosed. And we probably treated about 3,000 patients since 2013 with our protocol, which always is evolving to try and seal and heal the gut. Fix your cheesecloth.
So if I'm diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis or I've got chronic joint pain, I should be thinking I may have a leaky gut problem.
I would say seal and heal your gut and see what happens. Obviously, we can't give individual medical advice, but anybody with an autoimmune inflammatory, if you're just not feeling right, migraine headaches is another big one.
Hmm. So there's not some kind of like just leak stop stuff you can take that'll plug up your leaky gut?
Well, there are things in our protocol that kind of do that. Glutamine kind of helps to seal and heal the gut. But it's well, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to stop the different things that are causing damage to your cheesecloth, and it's not just gluten. So let's just say there's three things in a broad sense. There's foods. Gluten happens to be, you know, on that list. It's kind of a chicken and egg. Gluten can damage your cheesecloth. Once your cheesecloth is damaged from something else, then gluten becomes more of a problem, or your celiac gene might get turned on. So you've got foods. You know, the big one we're going to find is the tobacco of the decade is GMOs, and I really think that's the thing that's inciting this and damaging the cheesecloth, and then that's why more celiac genes are getting turned on. So you've got foods, so you want to clean up your diet, and we have nutritionists right. that talk to our patients about that.
Right.
And then the second thing is pathogenic microorganisms like yeast, pathogenic bacteria, and parasites. Just to back up a minute, you know, for years, doctors were told that ulcer disease was caused from too much stress, and a Dr. Barry Marshall discovered a bacteria, H. pylori, Helicobacter pylori, that actually causes ulcers. So it's just another case of the medical community thinks they've got it all figured out. I mean, he was ridiculed and laughed off the stage when he started to suggest that ulcer disease was an infection. So, so foods, pathogenic microorganisms, you get a lot of people with yeast overgrowth that have been on all these antibiotics or their sinus infection or whatever. And then the third thing is medication. So you've got some joint aches and pains because you've got leaky gut. And the next thing you do, you start popping ibuprofen, which is probably the most common medication to further damage your cheesecloth. You're just fanning the flames at that point.
So what does ibuprofen do to your small intestine, to your cheesecloth?
So it causes a direct injury to it. I mean, starts in the stomach, but it damages the small intestine too. So one of the causes of ulcers is medication. It's not just H. pylori.
Interesting. So Gerard, how do probiotics fit into all this? I hear a lot about probiotics, pro, con, take them, don't take them, whatever.
Yeah, you know, you hear a lot about probiotics. I've been preaching probiotics for 25 years. Probiotics, gluten-free, all seems very trendy, but here's a way to think about it. So want your listeners to be as healthy as they can be. So think of your body as like a plant. And there's three things that need to happen. One, you need to focus on what you put in. So you want to, again, eat a nutrient-dense whole food diet, preferably organic.
Eat right. Yep.
And then the second thing that needs to happen is you need to ferment that food appropriately. And that's a function of having the right probiotics. So
ferment in your body.
So your small intestine is like a big fermentation chamber. So if you take cabbage, for example, and you ferment it, you've got sauerkraut.
Well, so that's why you prescribe for me to eat organic sauerkraut, right? Just a little bit every day?
Yeah, so eating fermented foods is a way to get probiotics in.
I love sauerkraut, by the way.
Sauerkraut's great. I mean, I try and get some every day, some kind of fermented food, and I take a probiotic supplement periodically. But the thing to realize is the probiotics are like vitamin factories. So if you eat raw cabbage, They're going to ferment it in your intestinal tract and create sauerkraut in your intestinal tract. That sauerkraut has 20 times the vitamin C that the cabbage does. So those probiotics are munching on that cabbage, and they're creating all these nutrients.
Munching on it?
Munching on it. They're eating. They're hungry.
That sounds, ooh.
Yeah. Now,
I am for biotics, by the way. I'm definitely probiotics. I talk about, how can you be anti-aging? Every time I hear that, I wince because I'm a day older today than I was yesterday, no matter what. I mean, how can you be against that, right? And the idea behind probiotics is, again, you're saying I'm giving my body a supportive element that it needs to help it function properly.
Yeah, you've got to have the good bacteria in there. Now, the third thing that has to happen is, so you've got to eat the good food. It's got to be fermented. Then the third thing that has to happen for your plant body to be healthy is to get the nutrients from out of the small intestine into your bloodstream. And that's a function of having an intact cheesecloth, and the little villi and microvilli that provide the absorptive area are like the roots of the plant. So if you were to take a nice plant, put it in a composted soil, cut up the roots, you're not going to have a very healthy plant. So it's three things: what you eat, ferment it, and get it into the bloodstream.
Okay, and run that by me again. The getting it out, you said it's the last part. So, was like, you gave an analogy there. And
so going back to the plant body, if you took a healthy plant.
I love that analogy, by the way. It really helps me understand more clearly that my body really is an organism. It is like a plant, right?
It is. It is an organism. And again, you've got to fix the root system. So we talk to patients about what they eat. We give them good probiotics as part of the program. And we give them things to nourish their root system.
Wow. Very cool. Very cool. Anything in closing, you feel like we really needed to cover?
Well, I think anybody out there should just feel about, take charge of your health. I mean, don't wait for somebody else to tell you what to do. And if I was going to give you one piece of advice, if you had some mysterious illness, try going off gluten for a while and take a good probiotic supplement.
Wow, cool. Well, I'm on that. I'm following that. And I do feel better, by the way,
good,
since I've started following your advice. And I told you guys, thank you, Gil. Gerard,
thanks,
Dr.
for having
Guillory,
me.
Love it, love it, love it, love it. And if you can, we'll have you back. I'm sure there's a lot of things we can talk about. And I've started a new segment in the show that I close out with, what I call the Curious George segment, where I allow listeners, if you want to email me any questions that you have, any thoughts, anything at all that we can address in the show, just email those to me, george@bentleybaz.com. Or you can go to the website, Being Young at Any Age. Just spell it all out, beingyoungatanyage.com. And I will try to address your questions on the show. This week I had an inquiry from Phyllis Bennett, who was asking. I talk a lot, and you've heard me speak about the power of medical hydrotherapy, a therapy process that we've developed. And we put these medical hydrotherapy systems in all our walk-in bathtubs and safe bathing appliances. And her question was, exactly how does medical hydrotherapy help her with her health and medical conditions? And if you want to chime in on this, you're more than welcome. But the bottom line is, we're looking for a therapeutic process that supports our body in its healing, natural healing process. We're not working magic or anything. We're trying to give the body what it needs to heal itself. And our body will do amazing things at healing itself if we support it in doing so. And the concept behind the medical hydrotherapy, and the reason we were able to get a registered trademark, is we're looking for four things. We're looking for temperature appropriate, sanitary, non-aggressive, whole body massage. So the idea behind that is, we think hot tubs and jacuzzis in the United States, and with Bentley Baths and the medical hydrotherapy, we really don't put these water jetted systems in our appliances because they don't meet the definition of medical hydrotherapy. So first of all, sanitary, we want to make sure that this is a personal bathing appliance, right? We want to make sure the water that is in the bathing well goes down the drain. It's not getting into the piping or the plumbing as you're experiencing it with all the body material and the filth and all that. That's going to create a sanitation issue. Temperature appropriate. Our body heals with different temperatures. We think hot tubs and jacuzzis, they're always hot. But the fact of the matter is, we may need colder temperatures to help our body heal, depending on exactly what we're dealing with. So if I have an acute, I sprain my ankle, I put ice on it. then I may move to heat therapy later on. If you're in the Colorado-Denver metro area, you may remember a few years ago Peyton Manning was promoting some insurance company, and they had a shot of him sitting in a tub of ice water in the training facility. Well, that's medical hydrotherapy. And again, the idea is you need to be able to adjust the temperature based on what your medical challenge is. Non-aggressive massage, if you think about a water-jetted tub, like a jacuzzi or a hot tub, that water is coming back into the bathing environment under high pressure. It's an aggressive stream of water. And now you think about a personal bathing appliance where if you're like sitting up in a walk-in tub and you've got these jets up the back of the tub or whatever it is, you're going to get a very aggressive localized massage in one spot. And actually, it can sometimes be injurious to people. Our skin thins, our connective tissues weaken as we age. So to have that high pressure aggressive impact, even though it's water on one spot, doesn't really give us the health benefit that we're looking for. The non-aggressive massage, we use warmed air, closed air system that's going to massage your entire body simultaneously. I tell people, if you think about a pot of rapidly boiling water without the heat, that's what we're trying to create. Those bubbles are actually energized in that water. But we want you to be able to experience that over your entire body, not just one spot. So whole body massage. So stop and think about it. When you have this therapeutic process available to you in your home 24/7 for the rest of your life, no matter what health condition or challenge or healing problem you might be dealing with, you'll have that powerful process available to you. And the real magic happens, and you may have a thought on this, the real magic happens when I can stay in that non-aggressive massage environment, temperature appropriate for 15, 20, 30 minutes. If you think of the hot tub, the warnings are all get out at 10 minutes, don't stay longer, you know, risk of overheating. Well, here we're adjusting the temperature. You know, most people do their therapies at close to body temperature. But the idea is now I can stay in there 20 minutes, 30 minutes, as long as I want to. And I tell people, and I'll let you, if you can, a little quick response on this. The real magic happens because we're stimulating two major systems, our lymphatic system, which is our cleansing, detoxing process. Now I'm getting the benefit of exercise. Is Mark one of your friends, Mark McIntosh? He's a dear friend of mine, a motivational speaker. He loves to say a sweat a day keeps the doctor away. And I'm going, you're right, Mac, you're right. But my clients, my customers can't move their body enough to sweat. My dad, 99 years old, it'd kill him, right? But this is a way we can get the benefit of sweating and purging and flushing our lymphatic system, the inflammation, the toxins, all that out of our body. And the other is stimulating our microcapillary system, which helps us flush these things out. Do you have a thought on that process at all before we close out?
Well, no, I would just say that we're always trying to be at the same temperature. You know, we've got heat in the winter and we've got cool in the summer, and being exposed to extremes of temperature. Now, caution, you know, if you have any health problems, but that's why you see these cryotherapy tanks, and you know, it's really good to kind of, as you said, kind of get the extremes of temperature sometimes.
Right, right. And again, the point is we're just giving our body what it needs. It's an amazing process, an amazing plant, right? You know, if we will heal ourselves, you cut that limb off, I'm not going to say.
Take charge of your health.
Yep, yep. And we're learning so much. Again, thank you for being with Being Young at Any Age. This is George Bentley, your host. We're going to be exploring all kinds of cutting edge technologies and knowledge and information that are going to help us understand that we are going to live to be 95, 100 years old, whatever. And I tell people that if you die before 120, you experienced a premature death. Because we know the human body can live to at least be 120 years old because of Jean Clement, oldest documented woman lived to be 122. But the question is, are we going to be the captains of our ship? Are we going to ask those questions, why, so that we're educated, informed, and can make our own decisions? Thank you for being here today. I love you. Keep listening. And remember, we'll help you figure out how to die young at an old age.
Thanks for listening to Being Young at Any Age with George Bentley. Tune in next weekend to learn how to create a roadmap to achieve happiness, health, and wellness today on EZ 1430.